T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
I got to get stay with this. But first, I want to grab Raz because of the world we're living in right now. What's up is down. What's round is square. Very convoluted world we're living in. Raz, as an example, tell us about housing sales and the number that just came out. .7% in July. Yet, as we discussed probably earlier in the week, one-third of all Americans did not pay their rent last month. It's insane, right? Thanks, Raz. It's fascinating when he said that. It's hard for me to wrap my arms around what's happening in America, but it is. And what it does, Raz, is creates the greater divide between the haves and have-nots, because the men that I know that are loaded are taking advantage of this business-wise, and good for them for being able to. But the folks being left out are angry and depressed and have anxiety. It's bad, man. Thanks, Raz. Think about what he just said. Record level of home sales last month. I know a real estate agent closed 7 homes this month. 7. It's unbelievable. I got a couple emails yesterday from landlords who say, I got tenants who can't pay the rent, and I'm going to lose my building, and no one's helping anyone. This is where we're at. Man. So, I can't let go of this letter. I think it's important that we discuss this at this a place and time in our culture and our society and where we're at in America. This letter sent from Dan, from Kane, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he's clearly a racist, because in the letter he says, why don't black people use their money, their drug money, to buy computers for their kids? And he says, there are jobs out there for them, whether it's a service job, a manufacturing job, or a stripper. And then Barb called in and said, well, it's true. Black people all have drug money, and black kids shoot people on weekends. And she said, that's not racist. I tell you what, it scares me. It does. One of my close friends, Ron Layton. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Marty, good morning, and thanks for having me back on KDKA.
You know, I reiterate this because I think it's important. Ron is a Central Catholic guy. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame. He has 2 PhDs. He served 4 presidents of the United States in the Secret Service. And you hear a letter like this, sir, and he's African-American, and you respond how?
So the way that I respond, Marty, is that, number one, it does not scare me, because not just me, my generation, and most certainly the generation before me, and those are the generations that I have access to. That's why I feel like I can speak to that.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a very common thing. This is pervasive. It is common. And I'm not at all surprised.
Really? Ron, hold on.
Not at all.
Ron, you're telling me this letter, this thought process from this guy and Barb who called in, this is common.
I think it's very, put it this way, Marty, it's more common than not.
Yeah.
So I said in my text to you, this is an attitude that black folks have been dealing with for, again, my generation and the generation before. This is why a black parent, or it doesn't have to be a parent, it could be anyone, this is why from the time that you are a small child, you have always heard you have to be twice as good, not to get twice as far. It's twice as good to get half as far. Every black person knows this of any age. Well, why would I have to say that? Well, Marty, I would have to say that to combat the attitude that was presented by the person that wrote the letter.
Yeah.
And by Barb, to be quite honest.
And the woman who called and said, well, sure, they have drug money, and sure, they should use drug money to buy computers, as if, well, who doesn't know that?
That is a common belief among many people. That's why I say this is not a surprise to me. This is black folks have to handle this as a problem set before breakfast. This is the way you roll out of bed. None of this is a surprise.
Hey, help me with this. You're in a very, very, very successful, high income, high education region of the country, D.C. Is this just a Pittsburgh thing, man, or is this an American thing?
So there are pockets of this across the country. However, black people, so I remember, Mark, so you know, I grew up in Homewood.
Right.
I grew up on Northside,
right.
East Liberty. I know Pittsburgh very well.
Of course.
And from the time, again, I'm in my 50s, so from the time that I can remember as a little boy, what did I hear? Hey, go to school, get your education, but your opportunities are going to be significantly limited if you stay in Pittsburgh. So what usually happens is folks leave. Now, I live about 4 hours away, and I live in an upper middle-class neighborhood on a golf course that looks like Fox Chapel, to be quite honest, and is 90% black. What does that tell you?
They'll be shocked. Hold on. That's non-existent. There's nothing even come close to that in Pittsburgh. Nothing.
No. And to be honest, it's nicer in Fox Chapel. But the point is that there was a recent University of Pittsburgh study that said that all you had to do was leave the city and your life expectancy would go up 6 years.
Yeah.
Now, these kinds of things have been scientifically investigated, and now you see a university puts a stamp on it. If you were black in Pittsburgh and you just grew up there, you didn't need a university certification to know that. Again, these are all common sense things that we as black folks, and if you grew up in Pittsburgh, you know this. And all of a sudden, it's, guess what? The only people that this is a surprise to, Marty, is white folks.
Yeah. No, I think so. I wish I could argue with you. I got nothing.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be, I don't think, a contentious conversation as much as it is. It shows an indication of where we are in terms of progress. Now, here's the other thing. I am really, really hesitant to call anybody a racist.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Because it does nothing, and this is in an unusual way, I'm going to agree with Dan. Right now, we see all levels of social unrest, George Floyd, the aftermath, COVID, all of this stuff. In order to move our great nation forward, it does mean no good to call you a racist. Because here's what happens. If you're white, you go, I can't say anything. And if you're black and you hear our conversation, you might say something like this. I am so tired of your black people, or you black people, waving the race and victim card.
Yeah.
Guess what? That conversation does no good.
Yeah.
There has to be a safe space that actually mature and intelligent people can craft to be able to flesh out ideas where I don't call you a racist, you don't call me a victim, and you don't say things like, well, if you got a college degree, it's easier for you to get a job. That's ridiculous. But the point is that there has to be a safe space in order to move the conversation forward. Because if not, you call me one thing, I call you another thing, we get pushed to our ideological corners, the divide widens, and then we wonder why we're still here 5 years from now.
Yeah.
So we need to get past the rhetoric, the internecine debates back and forth, the warlike debates. But the idea is to be able to say, let's talk about progress. I mean, It just doesn't do you any good.
Hey,
to
man,
call
can you hang?
Racist.
Can you hang, Ron?
Yeah, I can.
All right,
yeah,
man.
Of course.
I got plenty to ask him. I got to keep Ron. He's too good to be real. Guy sent me a letter, Dan from Kane, PA, nice town. He said he was upset because they hung up on him because he said that black people should use their drug money to buy their kids' computers. He says, you hanging up on me didn't help the dialogue. What dialogue would that be, sir? He also said they can find jobs. There is jobs out there for them, whether it's a service or manufacturing or stripping. Strippers. I have Ron Layton with me, one of my good friends, Central Catholic grad, two PhDs, worked for four presidents in the Secret Service. Ron, how would I have a dialogue with him? I mean, how would that go? Well, sir, okay. I mean, I don't understand. What is the dialogue with him, Ron?
So the dialogue with him is going to be the dialogue that I've had with many people. So there have been, let's just say, 5 or 10 occasions that someone called me an affirmative action hire when I was on the job, not realizing, hey, I had 3 or 4 more degrees than you did. And what ends up happening is, you know how your phone says rerouting or recalculating?
Yeah.
That's the way that this person looked at me. So the point is that what you're trying to do is you're trying to talk to someone who has a preconceived notion about something, about black folks.
Yeah.
We are less than, underestimates us, marginalizes us. And so what ends up happening, Marty, have you ever, you heard this from a bunch of black people, I'm sure. Hey, I wasn't talking about you black folks in whatever neighborhood. I know this guy. He's a good guy. I wasn't talking about him.
Yeah. So help me,
so
help,
what ends up,
help me
ahead,
with this,
sorry.
Though. Ron has like a 50th degree black belt. Honestly, could kill you with his hands in about 4 seconds. No exaggeration. And you're one of the most chill, that's what the kids would say to you, chill men that I know. So when you were marginalized and stereotyped and in essence said the only reason why you're here is because you're black, don't you get angry?
So I try not to, because that doesn't do Ron, that doesn't do me any good. You know, and I've said this before, anger is a great, great motivator, but a poor counselor. Hmm. So rather than getting angry, what I'll do is I'll find different ways to show you, to teach you, and actually to help you rethink things that you think, particularly about black people. And I've said this before, and no one really looks at it this way. Once you learn something, if you learn something as a young child or a young police officer, once you learn it, that really is, you carry that with you. Do you know how hard it is to unlearn something? Because
yes.
Number one, you have to realize that you were probably wrong, and you kind of have to chip away at that. You got to chip away at that. And so that's really, really difficult. But if you don't try, then we're here, you know, 5 or 10 years. Marty, and I have a story for you about privilege, if you have time.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm over in Yemen, which is a tough part of the world. I've been there 3 times. It's on my favorite list of places never to go back to. I'm in a Yemen bodega. Pittsburgh doesn't really have bodegas, but the point is it's a small store. I'm trying to get coffee. It is a terrorist haven. I feel the hair on the back of my neck stand up, and I know I'm going to have a problem in this shop. And a guy walks up to me, and he says, "You Americans, with your privilege, you get pissed off when we don't have your brand of coffee in our store. You're lucky that you have coffee. We have coffee at all." So I thought about that as juxtaposed to our current conversation about white privilege. Number one, he looked at me and said, "You Americans with your privilege." And the point, Marty, is this. Number one, I was pissed off that I was accused of being having a privilege. Hey, look, I'm over there working for our country, working 19 hours a day. I just want a cup of coffee. So in my mind, look, I'm getting up, I'm going to work, leave me alone, let me get my coffee.
Right.
I'm being accused of having a privilege And guess what, Marty? From his perspective, he was probably right. He was probably right. And the point is that I'm being accused of having a privilege that I didn't realize that I had. Is there any translation to that into the current conversation?
Sure.
About white privilege?
Yeah, yeah. Very common.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think so, too.
But conversely, I should not feel guilty because I've worked two jobs for 15 years and I'm going to use money to pay for my kids to get tutored.
No. Matter of fact, this is part of the promise of our great nation that we as black people, and it's not just black people. I mean, we're having a conversation about this. But this is part of the problem that's, or part of the promise that is guaranteed to everyone, that we keep pushing forward and leaning on that Constitution saying, no, this is access for everybody. That's what it's supposed to be. And that's why people like me and you continue to try to further this debate. But we don't do it through division. I don't do it by calling you a racist. That does me no good. And it does you no good to say that I continually put out the victim or the race card.
Hey, I think you should run for president. That comes in from Brian. I got several texts running you for president. How about we just run you for the mayor of Pittsburgh and you move back here? Would you handle that, man?
You know, so here's the funny thing.
Hold on, man. Can you hang still?
I can, yeah.
All right, I need him. I know this sounds funny, but I do. Talking about a letter I got from Dan, who said that black people should use drug money, their drug money, to buy computers for their kids. And he says if black people can't find jobs, they should become strippers. Okay. And the discussion filtered over into white privilege. My notion that, by the way, big piece in the Wall Street Journal about this. Americans are putting together teaching groups, teaching pods, paying tutors to teach their kids, and feeling guilty because it's being called white privilege, and suggesting that they invited minority folks into these groups and they didn't want to be their own minorities, the only minority in the group. This is the dynamic of race in America today. And then Americans who use Chicago as an example and say, why don't you fix, you keep shooting each other in Chicago, black lives don't matter. So then Americans believe that all black people want to shoot each other like they do on weekends in Chicago. I hear it all day long. And so it's a very, very complex dynamic of race. And my friend Ron Layton, who has seen this his entire life, it's very complex and convoluted what's happening right now, is it not, Ron?
Marty, it is. It's complex. It's convoluted. And if you look at progress over a historical arc, you see periods of time where it looks like we're really moving forward. People have a tendency to point towards the election of Barack Obama and go, "Aha, we fixed everything." And of course, his election is a wonderful story of progress in our country. We're 244 years old, and at the time of Mr. Obama's election, 8 years, 4 years ago, his second term. The point is being able to point to that as a uniquely American story is indicative of how far we've come. But what ends up happening is you get these pockets of things that happen that remind us that when it comes to race relations, we've put Band-Aids on things that we actually need surgery for.
Well, they called the Obama election post-racial America. In other words, racism is dead. And here's what I hear all day long. Well, you got your black president. And look, what I'm suggesting right now is with COVID, with the economy, with all of the different shootings involving police, I think folks are more divided than ever before. And I see it in Pittsburgh every single day, sir. Every day.
And, you know, the other thing too, Marty, is anytime there's a chaotic situation and people feel anxiety, they feel stress, they feel out of work, typically you're looking to blame something or someone. And that generally starts to push the division further to the corners. And the way that we've conducted ourselves in terms of how we're having this conversation on race, I'm not so sure that at the end of the day that it's helped. And so you start off with protests with George Floyd,
right,
and then you find out how easily and how fragile a message, a righteous message, can be taken over by people who all of a sudden want to burn a police car, who should go to jail, assault other people, who should go to jail, and who just want to hijack a message. And so now it's very hard to get it's hard to elevate a conversation when you've got people that are just acting like damn fools.
Right. And I think now what's happened is they've hijacked it and turned it into, because you see police cars burn, because you see folks screaming and yelling and giving the mayor the middle finger and crapping on his sidewalk. That happened. And so now what white Americans say is, this is what they do, sir. And so everybody gets hurt by this so-called progress, right?
Yeah. So my point is, even the most fragile, even the most salient, righteous message is fragile to a hostile takeover,
right on,
particularly in a democracy. So it only takes a few idiots in a march to start and cascade a series of negative events. And then all of a sudden, everyone who already kind of believed that, hey, look, you guys, meaning you black folks, you've had your chances and this is what you do with it.
I agree.
And so it fuels an underlying notion that's already present in the minds of people who kind of wanted to believe that anyway.
Right on. And it becomes one step up and two steps back.
That's right. That's right. And that's probably the nature of progress. And it just takes so much time. But the point is that to be a mature group of people, you got to have room to have debates that are difficult, that you actually, at the end of the day, you end up saying, did we move the ball forward? So you had a question, how do you deal with a guy like Dan? Well, first of all, you end up saying, hey, Mr. Dan, I get your comment, but why do you think that way? And most often when you talk to people like this, you end up saying, tell me why. And they end up saying, well, I saw it on television or I read something. It's almost always anecdotal. It's just when people say things like, well, I heard or they said, and then you go, who said it? Well, they have a problem with that. So when you dig down into why somebody believes this, it starts to help in their unlearning process.
Well, and let me use as an example. My boy Billy reminded me of this. So you will have true belief that there needs to be police reform, true belief that there needs to be better training, true belief that there needs to be better funding. All these things are relevant. But what the public sees will be a video from a neighborhood in an inner city where there's a DJ in the streets and folks are dancing and they're all black, and white America says, see, that's what they do. And then every single righteous protester and their message goes down the drain. Fast.
It does. And what happens is human beings have a tendency to focus on the food fight rather than the food that's being served.
Nice.
So what ends up happening is there's always that thing that's going to point to the belief that you already had.
Right on. Hey, I got to go. I got, though, at least five people who want you to run for president. It's well below your pay grade, Ron. That's what I tell them.
Well, listen, here's the lesson here with leadership. It's very, very easy to lead when the sun is shining. But I have been around lots and lots of politicians. First of all, you can't ever really satisfy everyone. And one thing that Mr. Peduto was finding out is how quickly he can be turned on.
That's right.
I think very easily you can characterize him as a friend of liberal causes.
Oh.
But at the end, yeah, exactly. But at the end of the day, when there are less people to do enforcement, this is the biggest friend of people who are interested in criminal action.
Right on. Mr. Ron, thanks, my brother. Ron Layton, you are the best. Oh, at least run for mayor of Pittsburgh. Can I get you to do that?
I tell you what, I'm happy in the private sector. Uh-huh. It's not a bad deal.
Uh-huh. Thanks, my man. Talk to you again.
Thanks, brother. Take care.
He is amazing.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.